You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to Required Reading.
I'm Charlie.
And I'm Amy.
And we are two unqualified Otago students.
And in this podcast, we discuss books and sometimes their adaptations, mostly so we can avoid our uni work.
On this episode of Required Reading, we are talking His Dark Materials. That's right, the whole trilogy. We're breaking all three books down. We're talking quantum entanglement, Jitagaze, blimps, gay angels, and teeny tiny little spies with teeny tiny little phones. Stay tuned to find out more. Thank God.
Thank God, seriously. God, hey. Thank you.
Sorry, actually... Thank the authority.
You are so right.
Get it?
Yeah.
Because today we're talking about just the absolute
masterpiece
best series ever.
Yeah, His Dark Materials.
His Dark Materials.
The Northern Lights, The Subtle Knife, The Amber Spyglass.
What is The Northern Lights? Is that just the first book?
Yeah.
But it's The Golden Compass in America.
Yeah, because again, you always have to dumb things down.
Of course.
Because the Americans
America
go,
they don't know.
What are the Northern Lights?
I don't know. How am I supposed to know? Stupid fuckwits.
Aurora Borealis.
Anyway, we're talking about His Dark Materials.
Yeah.
And I fucking love the series.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. By Philip Pullman. There's three books.
Three books.
They're stunning.
How did you hear about? They're a big part of our lives. I think it's safe to say, make that statement.
They're one of the series that I've just always known.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember
formative,
a time pre The Northern Lights.
Yeah.
And I think it's such a good series because every time you read it, especially at different ages,
yeah,
you pick up on different things.
Absolutely.
It's very complex.
It is. And when I read it for the first time,
yeah,
look, it all went over my head.
Of course.
Because I read it. And I say I read it. I didn't. I listened to it. My dad, the GOAT, greatest of all time, he was a big reader aloud. And he read the trilogy aloud.
God, that's cute.
To me and my brother. He has also read all of The Lord of the Rings, which is why...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And, like, I was, like, 4 at the time. Like, it's impressive to... I mean, the thing is that we were trapped in a car. We were going on a road trip around Australia for 3 months. And he took that time to trap us and to read us Lord of the Rings. And things turned out great. We love Lord of the Rings.
At 4 years old. My goodness. I was watching Beauty and the Beast. And that was great.
I wasn't allowed to watch Disney films.
Why not? Were your parents, like, Mormons?
Against capitalism, I think, was more the... They didn't like the capitalization of on princesses. I don't remember.
It was okay.
But we liked Lilo and Stitch. It's a
fucking good movie.
Like,
that is a good movie. But yeah, this series, seriously, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. The best world building. Just so fascinating. So interesting.
Just so intentionally done.
Yeah.
So well thought out. It's
yeah.
really... It's a tight knit story.
And I think that the best part of this,
yeah,
this whole mythology, the lore, if you will, is the demons. The daemons.
Yeah.
Everyone loves them and everybody thinks about them.
They're so special.
You know, so demons, if you didn't know, the demons is like an animal that is kind of the embodiment of somebody's soul.
It's a corporeal form of your soul outside of your body.
Absolutely.
And it's an animal.
It is an animal.
It's normally of the opposite gender.
Yeah.
And it changes until you go through puberty and then it's the same animal.
And then it settles.
It settles
as a particular animal. What animal would you be? Don't say it.
Charlie said I'm not allowed to say cat.
You're not allowed to fucking say cat. Okay, here's my reasoning. You know what? This is my same argument for you're not allowed to say dog or cat for demons, for Patronuses, and you're also not allowed to say it for, like, which animal would I be? You can't say dog or cat. And you want to hear why?
Why?
Let me tell you. Because we already totally personify and we totally we ascribe human characteristics to both of those animals fucking much that it's so easy to say, oh, yeah, I'm such a dog. I'm such a cat. No, you're not.
You've really been holding that in. And I think he's been holding that in because this year I've been...
I've told you so many times.
I'm well known for asking many an abstract question. Yeah. You know, what cheese are you?
You're
a Kerman Gouda, obviously. I'm a goat's cheese.
Yeah.
But then I don't normally prep to answer my own questions. I just ask the questions and let chaos win, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can't say cat.
No.
I'm definitely furry, that's for sure.
Yeah,
scales?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Lizard skin? Absolutely not.
No, I really see you as some sort of woodland creature.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Why is that?
You just seem quite English.
How fucking dare you?
And also quite quaint.
I'm not English. Scottish or Irish, thank you.
No, I stand by my ground.
English. I am not Anglican. I'm not Anglo.
I'll accept both England and Scotland. It's not Scottish though. I also see you as quite sort of quaint.
Thank you.
And I see you as comfortable.
Thank you. I'm not English. I won't claim that. I think I could be some kind of weasel. That's not got a proportionate body.
Yeah. Is a weasel a rodent?
No, I don't think so. I think it's
a marsupial? What's a marsupial?
A marsupial is something that has a pouch.
I don't think they have a pouch.
They give birth to live babies.
Yeah.
But not every mammal is a marsupial. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, no.
I think that they're related to rodents, but I think they share a common ancestor. But I'm thinking, I would say some kind of pine marten or polecat, a stoat. But I do live in New Zealand, and I do understand that stoats are predator. Oh my god,
they are predator. they're pests.
Stoats are public enemy number one in New Zealand because of predation. And so I'd like to say, and I feel I've dwelled on this for a few days. I've dwelt, if you will.
Mm.
I think I'm a fox.
Yeah. I think that's totally fair enough.
I think that's, you know.
I think that's justified.
What animal do you think you'd be?
Okay, well, initially, my initial thoughts is something evil.
Yeah.
Something
slithery,
villainous.
Slithery.
Yeah.
Snake.
Which, I don't know, easy to say.
I think it is.
Easy to say snake.
Yeah.
But specifically, I would be like, I would be a domesticated snake.
Yeah.
A domesticated.
Like a python? A viper?
Yeah, but very, very colourful.
Yeah, obviously.
Very colourful, kind of nice, but still a snake. Still a slithery, slithery little slippery snake. Or I would be like a really, really like. Surprisingly deadly a mammal.
Yeah,
so I'm
like
not
a
talking
honey badger.
A honey badger. I'm talking a mongoose. I'm talking a Pallas's cat.
Yeah.
Short
I think that's
legs,
fair.
Surprisingly effective.
I didn't see you as furry, though.
You see me as what, slimy?
Kind of sleek.
Scaly.
I'd say sleek. I'd say like a mongoose.
Mm.
Like, I think a Pallas's cat is too fluffy for you.
Yeah, I am known for my sort of tall, slender physique. So
they
a mongoose
they call you
makes
stump.
Sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can fight a snake.
I think it's important. I have to bring up the elephant in the room. And by elephant in the room, I mean small ginger cat.
Yeah. But let's just say there's not a small ginger cat in the room.
There isn't. We wish there was. But she's too old to travel.
No, she can't.
So it's important to note that a big member of my life, a big part of my heart, is a crusty geriatric cat that lives in Te Maru with my parents.
Yeah.
And her name, and you go, why is this relevant? Not only because I feel she is in some part my personal demon in real life, but because she's called Lyra. And she's named after Lyra from
astrology.
The Northern Lights.
Yeah.
She's quite famous, and she's famous for looking taxidermied. Well, she's alive. She kind of runs off spite, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Lyra is going to live forever because she's going to forget
that she needs to die. That she needs to die. Yeah,
she's,
absolutely.
She's just going to keep reviving herself, regenerating.
She's an Australian. We got her in Australia, and we went to the SPCA. Or in Australia, the RSPCA.
Okay.
Okay, it's the Royal Society.
God, of course it is.
And we went there looking for a black and white cat, which we were going to call Cookie.
ooh.
What the fuck is that? That is cocky. So embarrassing. Imagine if we had. It's like having like a shadow. You know, like,
oh,
like Smokey.
God.
A grey cat called Smokey. No.
Disgusting.
And instead we saw this laid back ginger kitten and we said, that's the one. And yeah, we'd been reading the Northern Lights just like right then. And we were like, she's the one. And we named her Lyra because we thought that she would be brave and adventurous, that she'd be outgoing, sassy, you know. Everything about Lyra as a character, we thought that she'd embody. The thing that she's embodied is, I guess, sassiness and nothing else.
In a way, it's ironic that you called her Lyra.
It is. It is. Because she doesn't go outside.
No.
She refuses. She hates it. She hates it out there. She doesn't want to be there.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and so that's we couldn't in good
it's important
conscience
yeah,
have this episode without, you know, tipping out Cat.
Tipping our cat
to.
Tipping our cat
without tipping our cat to Lyra
the cat.
So this one's for you, girl.
Seriously, all proceeds will go towards Lyra.
To Lyra when she next needs to get her last three teeth out.
Yeah, if only we actually got paid.
Seriously.
All right, to be honest, Amelia, I'm feeling freezing.
I'm feeling really tight.
Rigid.
It's cold in the studio.
It's cold. I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
For this.
I don't feel ready to like open up.
Nope. No. I'm actually feeling
vulnerable.
Closed, feeling very closed off. So I'm going to need a fun fact.
Okay. So, as we'll talk about later, a lot of Philip Pullman's writing is about theology.
He loves it.
Some would call him a critic.
Yeah.
And some would call him the devil.
I'd call him a critic.
I call him a critic.
That's a great fun fact.
No. So, he also has written a book called The Good Man Jesus and the Scoundrel Christ.
Thank goodness.
Which I can't help but think is maybe like a Jekyll and Hyde situation.
No, I do know what this book is about. Oh my God.
It's a fictionalized bibliography of Jesus.
Yeah, but as two different people, Jesus and Christ.
Yeah.
Isn't that brilliant?
I love that.
Two different characters.
I want to read it.
Yeah, apparently it's really, I think it's nominated for something. An
Something.
Oscar, maybe? That's movies.
Moving on.
Okay. My fun fact is, so Philip Pullman.
Yeah.
One of the most famous fantasy writers
Absolutely.
Out there. Except, fun fact, he hates most fantasy.
Mm.
So he absolutely hates Narnia because it is racist and sexist.
It is.
He actually wrote an essay about it. I think the name was just Narnia is
racist
and sexist. Yeah. And then he also hates Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Because he finds maps
really
boring.
Annoying.
He goes, I don't care about
and
maps.
And honestly, same.
Yeah, fair
and
enough.
Normalize hating thing. Like, loving your own version of something and hating everybody else's.
I think it's such a slay.
You know, just own it.
He's like,
let's stop pretending.
The only version of this genre that I like
is
my
own.
Fair enough.
I've nailed it.
Yeah. And you know what? I agree. He has nailed it.
Yeah.
God, such a good series. But I'm going to need one more bit of information.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. How have you furthered the gay agenda today?
Oh, God. I'm dumbfounded. This is in the script. I knew you were asking.
You knew we were.
How have I furthered the gay agenda today?
Yeah.
I spent an hour getting ready to go to one lecture.
Yeah.
And I left far too late because I needed to perfect my outfit.
Okay.
And I had to put lipstick on. And that was, you know.
Did you get to the lecture on time?
I got there 3 minutes late.
Okay, that's
and
all right.
And look, things worked out. It turned out that my exam's going to be much easier than I thought it was.
And actually,
I'm not saying that that's
more gay.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the exam, but the 3 minutes late
The
bit.
3 minutes.
It was
you
also
know, like,
furthering
yeah.
the gay agenda, so
and
thank
it was
you.
Just, I just went in and sat down like I, you know.
Making an entrance.
Exactly.
It's perfect.
And I took the elevator up the stairs. I said, I'm not getting sweaty.
Yeah. I furthered the gay agenda today by, I went out for lunch with my straight male friend.
Yeah.
And we spent the entire hour talking about his feelings and how he's going at the moment.
Yeah.
And you know what? That is furthering the gay agenda.
That's pretty gay, yeah.
You know? He's not gay.
No.
But he's slightly more gay.
Yeah, now.
Today.
and
today he was.
And it was gay of you.
It was very gay of me to help the straights.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And to provide that emotional support.
Yeah, and to create that sort of like, gosh, the straights are doing so badly at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's not good for them out there.
No, but I'm not going to help.
No.
Only
Only this one.
Only this one.
Yeah. He's nice.
He's so nice and hot.
And really hot.
Okay.
Okay, okay.
We need to get into this fucking book. Okay, so Amy.
Yeah.
Tell me what happens in the first book.
Okay, great. So we open with Lyra Belacqua.
Okay.
This is our main character. We've spoken of her just a few minutes ago.
Yes, we have.
And her demon, Pantalamon. There's some contention about how you say that. Some people say Pantalimon, but I don't like that.
What did you say?
Pantalamon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I think is the most sensical of the options.
Yeah.
Pantalimon.
I say Pantalimon.
I know, but I don't like it. So I'm going to say Pantalamon. You say Pantalamon, I say Pantalamon. You know, that it's okay. that old song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? And they live in Jordan College, which is a fictional college. Well, it's not fictional. We're in a different world, that's safe to say.
What?
Okay, just cut that out.
So it is fictional.
No, I don't mean that. But it is fictional. I just mean we're in a kind of parallel universe with it. Just cut it out. Oh, God.
For me, the real Jordan College. Okay?
Okay. So they live in Jordan College in Oxford. Okay? Oxford, UK. The university, that is.
But look Oxford away. University is real. That's real. Jordan College, fictional.
Allegedly.
Up for debate. Up for debate.
So she lives at this college. It's weird. She's not supposed to live there. But her guardian, who is very mysterious, Lord Asriel, has left her there. And he, kind of at the start of the book, goes off on an expedition to the north.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about this idea of dust with a capital D. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then a very charismatic woman called Mrs. Coulter comes, okay? And she takes Lyra away from the college so that she can be her little assistant, okay? And before she leaves, Lyra gets given this device that's called the alethiometer. It's a golden compass, some would say. Mm. And it's a truth-telling machine, but she doesn't know how to use it yet, okay? And she has this best friend called Roger, and just as Lyra's leaving, Roger goes missing, okay? Yeah. Lyra goes and lives with Mrs. Coulter, but things are tense and scary and not good.
Mm-mm.
And she finds out some information about Mrs. Coulter, which makes her not happy.
No.
That's for sure. And so she runs away and she finds the community of Egyptians that she knew from Oxford.
Yeah.
So with the Egyptians, she learns some things. She learns that Mrs. Coulter, mysterious and charismatic, was once with Lord Asriel, mysterious and charismatic, and they're Lyra's parents. I know. And finally, kind of with this revelation, Lyra learns to read the alethiometer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to know that the alethiometer is, it's just a compass with like hundreds of symbols on it. And there's three hands?
There's three hands. No, isn't it? I think it's only like 26 symbols 26. Or something. And it just like goes like, bing, bing, bing. And everybody else is like,
it's
I
like,
have
the
no
fuck
idea.
Is that doing?
I have no idea what's happening.
And Lyra's but she's like,
she seriously taps in.
Yeah.
She taps in.
And so Lyra, and so it turns out that Roger's not the only child going missing.
Mm-mm.
People are being taken by what they've called the gobblers.
Yeah.
Okay. And we know that they're being taken somewhere in the north. And so Lyra goes on an expedition with the Egyptians on their canal boats northward. And they stop in this small fishing town and they meet some characters we'll talk about later, Yorick Berninson, Lee Scoresby, and, of course, Serafina Piccola.
Oh, my God, I can't wait.
But kind of along the way, Lyra gets kidnapped, okay? And she gets taken to this experimental station where all of the kidnapped children are. It's called Bolvanger, which I always thought was just, like, the scariest
What a great Bolvanger. Name.
Ugh. Okay.
Love it.
And she's there and she finds out all of the atrocious things that they're doing to children there. It's very dark.
What are they doing to children?
They're cutting them in half. And you say, and I go, someone said date me.
And then after that you say, and then I'll
and
retort. And
your
reply would be
okay, so they're cutting children in half, and the way that they're doing that is they're severing children from their demons, which is yourself, and so they're severing them with this giant guillotine. It's terrifying.
So scary.
And so Lyra, because she loves to cause chaos, frees herself, Roger, the rest of the children, and they all run out into the snow. Okay.
Yeah.
And then we kind of move into part three. Lyra and Roger go by themselves for a bit, and Lyra helps Yorick Bernison, a giant bear, reclaim his rightful throne.
Thank goodness.
And then they go and they meet up with Lord Asriel because they're like, Mrs. Coulter, bit crazy. She was a bit crazy, wasn't she?
Can you help us?
Can you help us? I think, I reckon my other parents bound to be a bit sensible. But as everybody knows, one crazy parent normally equals another crazy parent.
Absolutely.
And so they go there and Roger's killed.
Roger is killed.
He's killed.
And but in the process of Roger being killed,
a gate to every world that ever exists, parallel universes, is opened. And the book closes.
That's right.
As Lyra walks through the gates.
And you know, what I want to say first off the bat.
Yeah.
Is the way that Philip Pullman is able to capture the idea of having a demon and how important and a part of you they are is simply incredible. Like, it's incredible he's able to get it to the point where when you find out that they're being separated, it does sound like
it is the worst
thing that could possibly happen.
And the way that he, like, it's a complex idea.
Mm.
The way that he, like, I don't remember any words.
It's a good point, though.
The way that he renders the feeling of having a demon,
yes,
and the way that he gradually introduces all of the kind of implicit social rules about demons, like you're not allowed to, touch
them,
another person's demon.
They can't get very far away.
They can't get far away from you. They like have to be with you. And there's all of these kind of rules, and there's also these kind of assumptions that if you have this kind of demon, you're probably like this kind of person. It's really tied to all of these complex things.
Yeah.
And the result is that you read it, and you finish the book, and you're upset by Roger's death. But what you're more upset by is the fact that you don't have a demon and you'll never meet
them. Seriously. Demons look so fun, especially for extroverts.
I know!
My goodness.
But also for introverts.
Yeah.
To have one special friend.
But, you know, introverts probably don't deserve as many rights, so...
Oh, God. but it is such an interesting concept.
Yeah. Love it.
I love it. I love it so much.
It's so
it
immediately
hurts.
Engaging.
Yeah.
And I also find it particularly fascinating because it's kind of got that innate draw of like, oh, that's kind of how I feel. I feel like I've got a soul.
He really
and I feel like they
that.
Are kind of animalistic. I feel like there is this other half of me.
Absolutely.
You know? Oh, brilliant. Love him.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I want to talk about with demons.
Yes.
Is I want to talk about the gendered aspect of demons.
I think that's really interesting. So like the most common thing is that you identify as a woman and your demon will be male.
Yes.
It's normally this counterpart. Like it's
usually the opposite sex.
Usually the opposite. There is mention that you can have somebody of the same sex with the same demon, but it's kind of quite rare.
And he, from what I can remember, he never really outlines when that happens, just that it's rare.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it is the queers.
It could be.
Or people who are, like, it's kind of a metaphor for gender dysphoria.
Dysmorphia.
Dysmorphia.
That's how I read it, that it was a gender dysmorphia.
I think so too, thing. Yeah.
And I think it's a really interesting and before its time kind of conversation to have, that there is... like there's a good portion of you that is masculine, but there's a kind of equal portion of you that is feminine.
Yeah,
and I think that's
I agree.
A conversation we're only really having at the moment is like figuring out the portions of yourself which is masculine and feminine, and how you have both of those things in you at the same time.
And if we're talking about Lyra, and we're talking about Lyra and Pantaleon, and we're saying, okay, so her demon is her other half. Okay, well, her other half is man.
Yeah.
Male.
Well,
how can we...
He's a pine marten.
He's a pine marten. Well, later. He's just a demon at this point, you know?
Yeah.
He could be anything. But then the whole concept of what gender Lyra is out the window because...
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
They're 50-50.
Yeah.
You know? Which I think is like very complex things to throw into a children's book.
And there's also like, now you mention it, there's very little like... Like, there's people doubting Lyra's abilities because she's a child.
Yes.
But there's not really anybody being like, you can't do this because you're a girl.
The only thing that happens with that sort of aspect is with Mrs. Coulter in dealing with the authority and the religious aspects. And everyone's like, my gosh, but that's crazy, but you're a woman.
Isn't that one of those things that is like, she only has that kind of power once she's like her demon has settled.
Yeah.
If that's kind of an, like, if we take that as an analogy for like gender identity, it makes a lot of sense that like the really overtly feminine parts of her are established once she has, her demon has settled and she knows who she is, you know.
It's all fascinating.
It's such a great concept. It's so well executed.
God, Philip Pullman, you're the best.
Oh, he does the mahi, seriously. Yeah,
he really does. And you know, another thing.
Yeah.
Another thing that I have to say.
Yeah.
Is, so there's this scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where, okay, so they've got to this, they got to like Norway or something. They call it something else.
Svalbard.
So they get there. Yeah. Okay. They're hanging out. They're like vibing out in the snow.
You need to give me more details.
And Lyra's like, hold on, something is wrong.
Yeah.
No, she consults the alethiometer, and the alethiometer says, go over to this patch of woods.
She's kind of like, vibes are off.
Yeah, she's like, okay, I guess I will.
I'll have a wee looky at my truth watch.
So she goes over with Yorick.
Yeah.
And they find a boy.
It's important to establish that Yorick is a bear.
Oh, yeah. Did you say Yorick is a bear?
I think we glossed over that, but it's because she rides Yorick.
Oh, she rides Yorick. She rides her bear, seriously.
So he is a bear.
He is a polar bear.
A polar bear. But he's like a very big polar. And sentient, and he has opposable thumbs.
It's kind of like capital bear. You know, it's like, almost like a species, another...
It's another human. It's another version of a human. Yeah,
absolutely. But they don't have demons.
They don't have demons, but they do have bear armor.
They do, which is kind of similar.
Their demons. And he doesn't have it. Somebody took his away.
Maybe our demons would be our wardrobes.
You're so right. They haven't settled yet, though.
No. They never will. They never will. But anyway, so she's riding Europe.
Yeah. And she goes to this town.
You can't see me, but I'm mimicking a riding motion.
Yeah.
She goes to this town.
Which is abandoned.
And she's like, no, there's people there. And she goes, what's
up?
Yeah,
that's right.
What's up? And the people are like, oh, there's somebody, there's like a ghost in that shed over there.
Something scary in that little shed.
And Lyra's like, okay, whatever. We'll go over and have a look. They find this little boy. Okay. Yeah. And the little boy is in the barn and he's going, Ratta? Ratta? Ratta?
Ratta? Where's Ratta?
Where are you? Where's Ratta?
Where's Ratta?
Take me to Ratta. Ratta is the demon.
And this is before we've got to Bolvanger. We don't know what's happening with the children at this stage.
But the description of absolute horror. And kind of sadness and disgust at
and
seeing
also,
this
like,
boy
revulsion.
Ripped from,
without his demon.
Oh, scary, upsetting, raise the stakes. I just wanted to bring that scene up because it's so good.
It's
that
such a moving
chapter,
scene. Like,
it's so good.
It could exist, like much of this like trilogy, that chapter could exist as a short story on its own.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the first point when you really kind of feel this connection to like the idea of a demon, because you're mm-hmm. like, fuck, this is not. He ends up dying.
He does
the little
end
boy.
Up dying.
And he just keeps asking for Ratta.
He wants his Ratta.
Oh, it destroys me. It rips me apart.
Do you think that Ratta would have been a rat, though? Or do you think that would have been too obvious?
No, too obvious. Ratta also, not been... settled yet.
But then,
the boy was like, eight.
Where's the Ratta? Also, do you think
just
the,
a name.
Do you think the parents say the demon, or do you think the child?
No, the child. The child knows. The demon tells them.
The demon tells them. They go, here's my name.
They go, my name's Pentelemon.
My name is Ratta. Okay, blimps, am I right? Blimps, river barges, sleds.
There are some really interesting modes of transport
in this
story. And modes of transport that are so important in these books. And all modes of transport that I assumed would be a bigger deal when I thought they were normal. I thought
especially
we'd be
blimps. I feel
and
like
hot air balloons.
I feel like when I was a kid, blimps were everywhere.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought that if I wanted to fly from Wellington to Auckland, I'd kind of have two options: either a plane or a blimp.
Or a blimp, yeah. It wasn't helped by Up, the movie. You know that didn't help.
And also World War whatever with all the blimps.
One
had all the blimps.
Yeah, they had the blimps. Those war blimps.
The war blimps. And, you know, I feel like I just saw them all over the show.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I get it. Blimps, I'm tapping in. I'm realizing that blimps are a huge deal.
I feel like there's like a Bible length book of things that I thought would be a big deal as an adult that just aren't.
That just weren't.
Last week we spoke about itching powder.
Itching powder, quicksand, blimps.
Yeah. Scorpions. You know,
so many different dangerous, blimps. Interesting things.
And on the topic of blimps, we have to talk about Lee Scoresby.
We sure do.
He, my God, what a southern man.
What a man.
He rocks up and he's wearing, I can only assume, leather and a cowboy hat. And he's an aeronaut. Okay. Yeah.
He's Which got is Hazel. Cool. Hazel the
hair. Hazel the hair.
His hair.
And she's a
demon.
Southern belle.
Oh. And he just helps out. He just helps the crew out.
Yeah, he's just
and
here
you know
to make
what?
Friends.
The other mates that they bitches. Make are like a giant armored polar bear and a literal witch.
Yeah,
and he's
the queen of the witches.
And he's in here like, I don't have much. I've got a hot air balloon.
He's like, I'm an aeronaut.
Seriously,
and I speak in a southern accent.
And I'm here honestly just for the good vibes.
And you best believe when my dad read them out to us, he did the voices.
What would that voice have sounded like?
That's not fair.
Amy, could you just do a quick recreation? What do you think Lee Scoresby sounded like?
No, this is my fatal flaw. I literally...
Just try.
You think that I'm holding it back from you, and I can't think of anything. It's like blank.
No, I just believe in you. Just say, it's blank, and, you know.
I actually can't. I don't know how.
Can you do... Alabama is an easy one. You just go like... Alabama. Yeah, there you go.
See, I can do it if I just can't think of it.
Sorry.
Alabama.
Nice.
I can mimic, okay? I can't do anything else.
But seriously, Lee Scoresby.
And he's got guns.
Speaking of characters.
Yeah.
We've barely touched on Lyra.
Oh my God, you're so right. Okay.
Lyra, firstly.
Lyra Balakwa.
Fabulous
name.
And if my name was Lyra Balakwa, seriously could not be. I could not be stopped.
Before we had Lyra the cat, and we named her Lyra the cat, we had Lyra the mouse.
Really?
Yeah. But Lyra the mouse did come from the pet store with some kind of disease, and she died. Actually, our other mouse Padme killed her. It's a long story. But Lyra was only alive for a day, and we
Did
were
you
like
say the other rat. The mouse was called Padme.
Padme, yeah. From
gosh, you are a nerd.
I'm a big dork. I always have been, and I don't know why people are just finding out.
You're like an onion.
I've been coming
you're like
out
an
lately,
onion, and, you know,
as a dork.
And at the moment, the layer that you've revealed has been dork, nerd, geek.
It's interesting because the other layers that people have been surprised at. Especially our friend Eve McCallum.
Yeah.
She was like, "How could you keep the fact that you did rowing in high school from me? And you can ride horses. And you ski." And I was like, I'm multifaceted, okay?
Yeah.
I'm three-dimensional. I'm not just a manic pixie dream girl.
Seriously.
But yeah. So Lyra the mouse died after a day. And we were like, oh, actually, phew. What a good name. We didn't want to waste it on a mouse.
Yeah. And then cat. Lyra.
Yeah, Lyra.
Iconic.
And she'll live forever. So it's great use of
fabulous.
It.
Fabulous.
Lyra Balakwa. And she gets... she also...
She gets better.
And, like, imagine having such an iconic first name. Like, that's your name.
Yeah.
First of all. She gets given another name halfway through
does.
The book.
She sure
and you know
does.
What it is?
By Yorick.
It's Lyra Silvertongue.
Yeah, and do you know why?
Because she lies.
She's a liar. You're a liar.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah. She, oh.
She, oh God.
She's such a good liar. She could just lie. Seriously. She, okay, but beyond her being a fabulous liar, she's also just a fabulous, complex heroine.
She is such an interesting because she's not like good. She's a child, and she's like learning things and that kind of thing. But she's not. You root for her,
yeah.
But she's not like that proto hero. She's not Harry Potter. You know, she's not like.
She's not perfect at everything.
She's interesting.
She is.
And she's, like, bold. And she's, like, one of the best female characters in a children's story I've ever read.
I agree. And I think that one of my favourite parts of her is that she's absolutely fearless.
Yeah.
And yet she really can't do anything on her own, which is completely believable because
she keeps
she's, like,
trying
11.
To do shit by herself. She's like, you won't help me. I'll do whatever I fucking want. And like, it doesn't work.
And it's like you're 11 years old, Lyra. You're going to need a little bit of help there.
And it's also like she just... She's such a charismatic child.
Yeah.
And she forms these incredibly deep connections with all of these really complex characters. So we have, like, the iconic characters, like Yorick Bennison and Lee Scoresby. And, like, the thing that's... One of the things that makes them so special is their love for this small, angry child.
Yeah. Seriously. And I also really love... What I love about her is the fact that she's got this really strong set of morals right from the get-go.
Yeah.
But she's not dead set on them. She's able to change them over the course of the book as, like, her horizons expand, which totally shows...
And she reflects on it. She's like, oh, I was actually wrong about that.
Yeah.
And
it's
you're
great.
Like, pop off, little girl.
Yeah. Honestly. Fabulous character. Do you have anything else to talk about with the first book?
I think the witches...
The witches.
Do you want to talk about that later?
We can talk. We meet more witches later. Great. Maybe we can do it later.
Witch Sterling.
Fabulous. Well,
okay.
Amy, what happens in the second book? The Subtle Knife.
The Subtle Knife. What a name. Like, I'm like, and it's also, you're like, what a magical name. And then you're like, what if it was the opposite? The obvious knife. The obvious fork. The very bold spoon.
I'm really trying to think of other jokes, but I can't. Can't think of any. You got
the bodacious fork.
Seriously.
Okay, so it's the subtle knife.
Mm-hmm.
We left off, Lyra walks through the gateway. And I, before I go on, I think that it's... I don't think that any of these spoilers will ruin the books for you.
Absolutely not.
If anything, I think like the best reading experience for this is knowing what's going on.
We've also missed so much stuff.
So much stuff.
These books are actually incredibly dense. Even if... It really doesn't feel like that when you're reading it, but he wastes not a single word and not a single chapter on unnecessary
like Leo
detail.
Tolstoy, he's concise.
He's just like Leo Tolstoy. That's a really good analogy. Thanks.
But yeah, we're giving you a bare bones. We're giving you a taster of all of our favourite things.
Absolutely.
And we're hoping you go away and read them.
Yeah.
So the subtle knife. Lyra's walked off into the gate, into the other world.
Mm-hmm.
And she bumps into this little boy called Will.
Mm-hmm.
And he is like, the fuck are you doing here? And she's like, the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah, she doesn't know.
And he's like, what's that little animal? And she's like, what do you mean? And Will doesn't have a demon.
Why not?
So Will is from... This is such a good switch, okay?
Yeah.
After a book... Oh, God, I'm passionate about this. After a book of establishing one of the best fantastical worlds that has ever been thought of... He Uno reverses us. Will's from our world.
Yeah.
He's from our version
Lyra's
of the
gone
world.
Into, oh.
It's so good.
God, it's good. Love him.
So Will doesn't have a demon. He's from our world. He's from a normal Oxford.
Yeah.
We didn't really talk about the fact that it's kind of old-timey.
What, in
Lyra's
world? Yeah.
We'll talk about that when we actually like really get into world building. But it's kind of, there's no phones.
No. Oh, no.
There's no...
Cool. There's a lot of world building, so we'll talk about it when
but
we
it's
talk
important
about all the
to know
books.
That they're from entirely different worlds. It's not just that Lyra has a demon and his friend was with a talking bear.
No.
it's also... And so we get a backstory into Will.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he takes care of his... It's never really talked about why his mother is ill, but it's kind of like... Everybody sees it as like a paranoid schizophrenia and he has to take care of her. And she has this father that left when he was a baby. He's not sure where that is. And something happens in his world and he has to escape. And essentially he finds a little open window. And you know how he finds the window, Charlie?
How?
He follows a cat. He sees his little cat friend.
Yeah, he does.
What's the cat called? Moxie?
Yeah, Moxie.
Moxie. Maybe.
Moxie.
If we say it one more time.
Moxie.
So he has done something really bad and he has to escape the police. And so he sees his cat friend go through like it's and the way that it's described, it sounds like there's kind of a ripple in the air.
Where there's
coming through. He's like, what the fuck is that? And the cat just goes through it and disappears.
And so he's like, the fuck?
Sounds like a good idea. So he goes through. And so that's when we rejoin. He's been there. He's been in this other world scavenging. It's kind of dead. when Lyra turns up, and then we kind of resume the narrative.
And what is this world called?
Chittagaze.
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 That's the city they're in.
It's a creepy Italian world.
It is.
That's all there is to say. And so Lyra and Will kind of embark on this quest of understanding. The first book left us with a lot of questions, you know, and we've been also given more questions, like, by Will. And so, you know, they're trying to establish what this capital D dust is, who Will's missing father is, and where is he. And also, in the last book, Lyra lost their lithiometer.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for that. And they're doing this by, like, slipping through the windows that they know of. And they cross paths with all of these interesting characters. There's Lord Boreal. Okay. Lord, when I wrote that down last night, I was like, Lord Be Real.
Shut up.
I don't even have Be Real. and a physicist called Mary Malone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so in the process of finding the alethiometer, they find out that Lord Boreal has it. And they go, hey, can you give that back to us? And he goes, absolutely not. And he go, and they go,
fine.
What if we help you with something?
Yeah.
And he goes,
deal.
Funny you say that, actually.
Yeah.
You know what I'd like? In Chittagaze, okay, there's a little knife, and I want you to find it. Give it to me.
Get it.
And I want you to, we'll do swapsies.
Yeah.
And so they go through all of this stuff. They find this knife, the subtle knife.
It's not a very overt knife.
It's not very overt. No.
It's very...
It's subversive it's things, a, yeah, you know. It's very subtext, subtle. If you will.
Subtle knife, subtle. Yeah.
And so they get this knife.
Mm-hmm.
Will becomes the bearer, the capital B bearer of the knife.
Yeah. And in order to be the bearer, you have to get like two of your fingers chopped off.
Yeah, it's not good.
Not good.
And he's bleeding. Anyway.
Bleeding what?
And so Will and Lyra are like, we have to get the alethiometer. But it turns out that this subtle knife, right, it cuts through the barriers between worlds.
Yeah.
So the windows we talked about earlier, made with the knife.
Made by the bearers of the knife.
Yeah. And so they're like, you know what? We're not going to give it to Lord Boreal because...
This seems real useful.
And also, he seems kind of evil.
Not good. Yeah.
And so what follows is the most exciting action sequence I've actually
Seriously.
Ever read.
Oh, it is fierce.
It's so...
It's like, honestly, it's better than Ocean's 8. I loved... Ocean's 8 was great. But... Because it's seriously, it's a heist. They cut a small hole.
It's better than...
It's like,
what's
go,
that,
go, 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 go.
What's that train movie we went and saw? With Brad Pitt? And Aaron...
Bullet Train?
Aaron... Yeah. No, it wasn't called Bullet Train. Yes, it was.
But that wasn't a heist movie.
It was exciting, though.
It was.
Things were constantly
happening.
Like
just seemed like an interesting analogy.
Dying. Yeah, okay, well.
It's also better than The Rings of Power.
Like anything else. It's terribly paced. You know how I feel.
But honestly, the best action sequence ever.
It's
edge
like Battle of
seat.
The Bastards.
It is.
Game of Thrones.
It is.
Like, your heart is in your throat.
Yeah.
You care about these characters so much. They're using this magical device. Mrs. Coulter's there.
Yeah.
It's scary. It's dark.
Yeah. You Sorry. Best believe Marissa Coulter's there.
Yeah, okay. And remember how charismatic she is. Okay.
She's so charismatic.
She gets more charismatic.
And she's also evil.
She's so evil. And so they end up escaping. They've got the alethiometer. They've still got the knife. And they have to leave Chittagaze. Okay. But now we find out that they're being pursued by agents of the Magisterium. Mm. Now you say, what is the Magisterium? Okay.
There's so much lore
there
in these
There is so
books.
Much lore.
Yeah.
And so the Magisterium is essentially this, like, all-powerful religious force.
In Lyra's world.
Like the Catholic Church.
Yeah, but it's kind of the Catholic Church on steroids.
And
they,
real, yeah, it's not
they,
good.
They have sort of taken over... government.
Yep.
And they control
and censorship
everything.
And like all of any like
and there's different sects of it. And it's kind of a very it's quite a corporate version of
it is.
The church.
It's quite it's scary.
It's real scary. It's real scary.
It's scary in its coldness and it's
yeah.
like and it's also very male.
Very male. Yeah. And quite surprisingly scientific.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
they're
being
pursued.
Yeah.
There's this kind of battle where Will suddenly rejoins with his father.
Yeah.
We're not going to get into all of that, like the father stuff, because that's actually really complicated. And Lyra, at the end of the book, is kidnapped.
She sure is.
Okay.
She
and
sure
a lot
is.
Of our friends die.
Yeah.
Which is not
a lot
good.
Of people will die. Oh, and also, important thing to note about Chittagaze is that, so in Chittagaze, there's two important, we need to remember.
Yeah.
That it's a city.
Yeah.
The city, sorry, did I say the city's name? The city's name is Chittagaze. So it's a city overrun by children.
Yeah.
There's no adults
there. There's no adults.
And you says to me, Why? Where are all the adults? There are these things called specters.
Oh my god, they're so scary.
Which really reminds me a lot of Dementors.
But they're better.
They are better. And also specters is a better name.
Specters are.
They kind of do the same thing. They suck the soul from
an adult.
And only adults can see them. So all the adults have left and all the children are like, oh.
And it's kind
I'm
of
fine.
It's kind of in with this idea of dust.
Yeah, the dust, the demons also stop changing after going through puberty. It's all starting to,
and so this world doesn't have demons, but you say the soul gets sucked out. And so what happens to somebody that has a demon that's an adult, you know? So it's kind of, these are all of these things that are introduced are connected.
Yeah.
But the specters are fucking terrifying.
Terrifying.
And there's nothing you can do. Like, you can't.
And also, there's the other big battle that happens in this book, okay, is between,
you're so right.
So all of the children. So what happens is, in order to get the subtle knife, Will fights this man.
Yeah. Fight.
And he goes, "Give me the knife." And the man goes, "No." And so they have a fighty.
Yeah.
And Will gets it, and they kill. I think they accidentally kill the man, or they purposely do. I can't remember.
I think the man knew he needed to die.
I can't.
The last bearer, he knew that he needed to die.
He was died
like,
anyway.
He did die.
And all the children are like, that was my brother. Well, Angelina was like, that's my brother.
What happened to Paolo?
Yeah. And so all of the children turn
on
Will and Lyra and they're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah, not good.
Not good. Another big fight. And then the witches come.
Yep.
Anyway, there's this whole thing. So the witches, other people have traveled through the portal, okay?
You know what's funny?
The initial portal. We're talking these witches that we met previously. We've got Ruta Scooter. But no. Ruta Skater?
Ruta Scarbard? I can't stop
Ruta Scarbard.
Because if you didn't know anything about these books, it really sounds like we're making them up.
Oh, you just wait till we get to book 3.
So you didn't know about the children, and the children are fighting, and the fighters, and then the witches. And then
there's so many. It's so dense. It's so dense. And do you know what else is... Do you know what else is brought up in book 2?
What?
Angels.
Yeah.
Gay angels.
Gay angels.
My goodness.
There's kind of really a migration happening. In a direction of every type of thing ever from every single universe. And,
yeah.
You know.
Plane of existence.
Everybody's going north. You know what I mean? And,
but figurative north.
Yeah. Figuratively, they're going north.
Yeah.
And so the witches are going.
The angels are going.
The angels are going. We meet Balthamos and Brooke.
Yeah.
Okay, the gay angels.
God.
And they literally, in the second book, they just like float down to Will and they're like, hey, do you want to come with us? And he goes, where? This is at the end of the book.
Yeah.
He goes, we have to go meet Lord Asriel. And Will goes, not yet. And they go, but did we tell you that we're gay for each other?
They are gay.
We love each other. We're gay and we're angels. And Will went.
And Will goes, I don't know how that's relevant.
He was like, cool. I'm an ally, but that's not... I'm not going with you because you're straight or anything.
Yeah, we
need to find Lyra. And the gay angels are like, okay.
God, you're so demanding.
Let's do it.
Yeah. But weirdly, they listen to Will.
They do. Why? They love thee because they're gay.
They're so, yeah, because
they're
gay.
They're so gay.
But, yeah.
They listen to Will's
honestly,
feelings about a girl.
This is how we feathered the gay agenda today. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting things that come up.
Yeah.
In this book. And one of the interesting things that I'm not sure how I feel about it, but it's kind of suggested that the specters don't just exist in the world of Chittagaze. They also exist in Will's world.
Yeah.
And this is all hinted at that Will's mother suffers from schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And Will kind of puts these pieces together and he's thinking, okay, what if my mum are seeing these specters, or maybe not specters, but something similar,
yeah,
that none of us can see in the similar way that the children and the adults and Chitigadze also can't both see the specters.
Yeah.
Which I also just think is like an interesting way for him to kind of connect with his mother and to like
and also
better understand what she's going through.
It also makes a lot of sense. Like, it's a child conceptualizing the most complex mental disorder you can have, really. Yeah, yeah. And so it does make a lot of sense. And it also makes sense in relation to his father and who his father is.
Yeah, exactly. Which, again, we can't go into everything.
You know, you've got to find some things out.
Yeah.
But what I'd like to say is in the TV show, Will's father is played by Andrew Scott.
Oh, my goodness. Actually, there's some great casting all around in the TV show.
We're not there yet, okay?
No, we're not. We'll get to that later, but seriously,
Okay, so we've talked about Will's mother mm-hmm. and his backstory, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of people, and by a lot of people I mean you and my brother, mm-hmm. Find Will really boring.
He is. I think he's not that boring, but he is just, compared to Lyra...
Yeah, I mean, anyone compared to...
he's a nobody.
I want to be fair to Will, and let's just lay out some things. He's the sole carer.
Of his ailing, ill mother.
Like she is actively needs caring. He's also trying to go to school at the same time. He's doing a paper route to try and support them.
He seems like a lovely, very responsible boy.
He also lives in our world. So, like, why would he be as interesting as, like, little Lyra and Pan, you know?
I think it's because... You know, in most of these YA series, the side characters are generally more interesting than the main.
Yeah.
Which is kind
and
of what
is
I find.
It's really reversed it.
It's really reversed it. Like, if you were to just kind of read this second book and you'd completely skipped the first one, it would kind of make sense the way that it's being laid out.
Yeah.
Will, as the main protagonist, he's very sort of noble and brave.
You wouldn't find him boring if you started at the second
one. And Lyra is like the quirky side character that joins him on his quest.
Yeah.
But really, Lyra is the quirky main character that we love.
Yeah.
And Will is fine.
He's fine. But like, look, it's just like men living up to spectacular women. They can't.
Seriously, Lyra is above us all.
It's not Will's fault.
No.
It's not, you know?
It's Philip Pullman's.
Nobody chooses to be a straight white man.
Ugh. Is he white?
No. In the books, I don't think it's commented on. We'll get to that with the casting of the show.
Yeah. As has been brought up, is all of the books, they're named after a particular item that plays a big role
in each book.
In that novel. What were your thoughts on the subtle knife? So the subtle knife... If we didn't say, we did say that one side can cut through kind of the world.
Yeah.
The other knife can cut through anything.
And you know what? When I was on the His Dark Materials Wikia, if you will, it said everything in the known universe. And I was like, so it can't cut through the things in the unknown universe? I was like, that's a weird way to.
That's actually quite
say
a weird
that.
Phrase.
Everything in the known universe. And I was like, But it's a book where there's many unknown universes.
So it can't cut it
I think
those?
It was, look, I think it was the Wikia's fault.
Yeah, anybody can edit
and,
a
know,
Wikia.
And, you know, they're not paid at Wikia. You know?
No.
They're just paid. They've just got passion.
Yeah.
You know?
And honestly, I love a good Wikia page.
Oh, it's so helpful for me.
Yeah.
Have you ever contributed to a Wikipedia page?
No.
No, me neither.
No. Accidentally, I got to the edit version of... This one of the Survivor pages, but that was accidentally. I didn't mean to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. The knife. How do I feel about the knife? It's not as cool as the alethiometer.
It's not as cool. But I do like that they sort of gave Will something to do.
But it's also kind of not as cool as in, I respect the knife a lot now as an adult. It's so fucking cool that it can cut through worlds, the fabric of worlds.
Fuck
that's
yeah.
amazing. And cut through anything. And also, like, there's this conversation where the knife gets damaged.
Yeah.
And Yorick Bennison can fix it. The bear.
Yeah. This happens book three, though.
It does. At the start, though. So I think we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
But like, the thing about the knife, which I think made it more interesting to me, the alethiometer works so well because it's, like, inherently tied to Lyra and her ability to kind of dissociate, kind of be free. Like it's... She uses her soul to read it, essentially.
Yeah.
And in the third book, we kind of look at the knife through that lens as well. Like, you can only use the knife
if you have
if you're using your soul to use it. It's not just a knife that cuts through world. Like, will is cutting through worlds.
Yeah.
With the use of the knife.
Yeah, it's cool. And
did you also feel strongly about, because I did, I was like, that's sick. You cut through the world, right? Mm-hmm. Only Will can close the windows. And they describe it as he has to pinch them together in a special way.
I know.
Like a dumpling.
That's what I was just about to say. Kind of like crimping, like crimping pastry.
Yeah.
Around a beautiful apple pie. And I remember
like when we read that, Seamus was like, oh, it's amazing you can cut through worlds. And I was like, amazing they can crimp it.
Yeah,
like
you can crimp it back together.
And I just really loved that.
So, do you have any final thoughts on book two, The Subtle Knife?
No.
Brilliant. Let's get on to the Amber Spyglass.
So, book three, the Amber Spyglass. So, we've left off, Lyra's gone missing. Okay, Will's met his father, there's been a battle, he's met the angels. And we start with Lyra. She's hidden in a cave, and she's with Mrs. Coulter. And Mrs. Coulter's keeping her in a drugged up state.
Yeah, she is.
She's saying lots of weird things.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, my sweet child, don't wake up. I don't want you to be like...
She's being very maternal.
She's being surprising for how vicious and scary she's been in the past.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to mention a scary monkey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which we'll get to later. Get into that later. So as I said, the gay angels are trying to get Will to come to Lord Asriel, who's preparing for this. This is the first time we kind of hear about it. Mm-hmm. A war.
Oh.
Yeah. And Lyra goes, no. Will goes, not without Lyra.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough.
And so the Magisterium is in pursuit and sends, this was the other thing. The Wikia was like, the Magisterium sends a small army.
Literally.
with the quotations, a small army, allegedly, to hunt Lyra, and Lord Asriel also sends a small army. And so there's two small armies on pursuit. There's one Lyra in a cave and one Will.
Yeah, okay. All these people descending on the cave.
So things are happening. And then we kind of cut away.
Yeah.
And we cut away to Mary Malone, who I mentioned in the last book. She's a physicist, okay? She's the best woman.
She is the best woman. But you know what's even better?
What?
This fucking storyline.
Oh, I know. I know. You think we were making it up before? You think that we were being silly with the King of the Bears? Okay.
You just wait.
You just wait. So Mary Malone, what I didn't fill in before, she researches this capital D dust.
Yeah.
But in our world,
she calls it something else. She calls it like something matter. I don't know.
I don't remember. No. But anyway, Lyra comes to her and says, I know this is going to sound fucking whack, but I've got this machine.
Yeah.
And I can read truth from it.
Yeah.
And it's something to do with dust. I've heard of that. I'll leave you with those questions. And so in the space of time between that, Mary Malone's been going, hey, what if that little crazy little girl was onto something?
Yeah.
Her and her little pet... fairy mouse, you know, like maybe she was onto something.
And something that Mary Malone found out in the second book through her research is that this thing we call dust is somehow connected to consciousness.
Yes.
Because when humans attained consciousness, that's when the first evidence of dust was found.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
And so she ends up speaking to her computer through the dust, like Lyra does with her alethiometer. Mm-hmm. And the computer says, you need to go. You need to leave this. You need to go. And it's also because the Magisterium is coming for her.
Yeah.
And so she packs up her shit and she's like, okay, let's go. And she goes through a portal, one of the windows, and she arrives in this fantastic land.
The best land.
And the way that it's described, and then we have like some very long chapters where we get to see this land. She gets there, it's a big grassy plain.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous, beautiful. Beautiful greens, yellows, and a road. only a single road, and kind of weirdly smooth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a few different roads. There's some roads, there's some big trees.
That cut up the grasslands, and there's these big trees, and there are these creatures there that roll up
Squad roll up.
To marry the creatures, they are called the Mulefa.
The Mulefa. They roll up.
And, okay, so they're described as kind of like an...
It's an elephant. Okay, think of an elephant.
Think of an elephant, yeah. But it's triangular.
But it's got giraffe legs, okay? Imagine an elephant with four giraffe legs, and those giraffe legs are in a diamond shape.
Yep.
And that diamond is holding... A wheel.
Wheels. They're holding a wheel, and they roll on the wheel, and that's how they get around.
Yeah. Let's just sit with that for a second. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So
Mulefa.
Mulefa. So the Mulefa. Okay. I don't know where I wrote that down. Nowhere. I didn't. Okay. So, the elephants with wheels, mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know how to say this.
What else happens in there?
So, Mary observes the elephants. She goes with them to where mm-hmm. they live, where the elephants with wheels all live. And she observes the way that the wheels are actually naturally occurring from trees. Mm. And there's kind of this a mutually beneficial.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Biodiversity.
Something has developed through evolution that made it, this all make sense.
And so the trees can't exist without the elephants with wheels, and the elephants don't have any wheels without the trees.
No, they don't.
Oh, God. And she doesn't initially think that the elephants are sentient.
No.
But then she learns their language. And
she
their
does.
Language
with their
uses
trunks.
Their trunks.
Yeah. So she uses her arm
so
as her
So she uses her arm, and she kind of...
She
really,
communicates with the Mulefa.
She's very Jane Goodman,
Yeah,
know?
She is.
She is doing the anthropological research with the Mulefa,
yeah.
And she learns their language. She's beautiful. She learns that there's a threat.
Oh, yeah.
This is a beautiful, peaceful world where they just roll around on their roads, and they have their wheels.
Or so you think.
You think. But then... And it's only once Mary can speak with the Mulefa do we find out that there are giant swans that come and attack.
And they raid the giant swans. They
really,
raid
really
the village.
Big swans.
And it's kind of described as like
and they
Mary looks off into the distance.
And she's like, and what's she's that like, boat?
What's that huge sailboat? And they're like, oh no.
Oh no.
It's a swan.
It's a giant. They have a name for
and
it, but it's a
swan. And the swan is like, and like rips the whole village to shreds.
Kills
and all
the
Mulefa just like
smashes all the wheels.
They all like roll away to the next village.
And it's genuinely terrifying.
It is.
It's also terrifying because what are these ideas? You know,
they are pushing our imagination
they
to
really
its limit.
They really are. And honestly, that extended chapter is one of the most profound things I've ever read.
Well, it happens throughout the whole book.
Yeah, it does. Like you keep coming back, and every time you come, you're cutting away from this like really intense action to this
slow.
And every time, I remember when Dad would go to these chapters, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on? I don't want to read these chapters. And by the end, you'd be like crying. You'd be like, so beautiful that little baby elephant got its first wheel.
The little baby Mulefa finally grew up enough to have its first
not
wheel.
Not the giant swan.
The giant swan wrecked the village.
Okay. And so that's where we kind of leave Mary Malone. Yeah. The giant swans have wrecked the village. The elephants with wheels are kind of...
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's a pulling back of we've seen this perfect Eden, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And there's flaws, you know. And so we're going back. We're back to the world.
Yeah.
So Will is like, how do I get Lyra back?
Yeah.
He finds Yorick Bernison.
Yeah.
Who's helpfully around.
Yeah.
He's swimming, I think, when Wolf sees him.
Well, as we said before, everybody comes through the gate into Jettigadze.
Jettigadze.
And so they kind of
everybody is
join
going.
Forces.
So the witches,
yep.
Will,
yep.
Everybody, the two small armies and the giant bear all come together at this cave. And who's getting Lyra? Lyra is obvious. Lyra is the key to it all. Yeah, they save her from Mrs. Coulter. They run away. So like, I don't know how to... The notes here really get sparse because
there's kind of too much stuff here as well.
So they get away from the cave, but everybody's going north. There's two sides. We've got the Magisterium, Mrs. Coulter, some of the angels, and then you've got Lord Asriel, the tiny flying people, which we'll get into. The witches, the bears.
But essentially,
there's a war.
What book three is about is it is about this war, and Lord Asriel is the commander of one side of the war. And what they are trying to do is overthrow this entity known as the Authority,
which is God.
It's God. And the angels are they're technically the fallen angels.
Yeah.
Are the ones that we meet.
The gay ones.
Because they said, get out. Get out.
Get out.
Get out. So they're trying to overthrow. And that's this big battle that's going on. Trying to.
But Will and Lyra are like, not my task. Mm-mm. That is not my task. This battle.
But then everybody goes, actually.
It is. But Lyra goes, I'm actually looking for Roger.
Yeah.
And you go, Roger's dead. And she goes, and this is true Lyra. You know, yeah, she goes, I don't give a shit.
I won't help
I'm
you.
I'm going to the world of the dead.
Yeah, she goes, I'm literally not going to help you until I go to the world of the dead.
And so Will and Lyra go to the world of the dead. When they get there, Will gets a demon, which is interesting.
Mm.
So Lyra and Will go to the world of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Lyra has to leave. You can't go to the actual world of the dead with your soul with you.
Yeah.
And so Pan has to stay.
Which is interesting because you'd think it'd be the opposite. You would think it would be only the soul that can go into the land of the dead.
Yeah. But I think it's, I don't know. I think, I don't know.
Okay.
Good questions. and so they row across, and it's like the River Styx. There's a lot of references that are kind of imbued in this.
Yeah, yeah.
And Will has this feeling, like Lyra is like she's feeling this intense pain that we've been seen that we've been shown any time that, like,
anytime
that a human is too far away from their demon, there's this like intense ripping pain, and obviously it killed Roger, you know, like that kind of thing. And so Lyra's having this feeling about Pan leaving Pan, and Will's also having this feeling, and he's like, I don't have a demon, but he does.
And she's like, you do, we just can't see it.
We just can't see it
yet.
So they go to the world of the dead. Lyra finds Roger. It's gorgeous.
They essentially lead a civil war.
They do. Of dead people.
Of the dead people against the weird, like, siren woman?
What?
There are these scary, scary, like, eagle witch woman.
Oh, and, yeah. And the Furies.
Yeah, and Lyra's like, do you really want to be doing this? And they're like, no.
Lyra's like, have you heard of a union?
Seriously, they unionize
Lyra and Percy Jackson, dead,
including like the Furies, and everyone's like, actually, the Authority doesn't seem that very good. I don't like my bosses.
I just live in this pit.
I don't
want to
live in this disgusting place.
You know what? Let's unionize.
And they do. They do. So thank you.
So Lyra unionizes the dead, and she takes them through a final window, which goes on to the war that's been happening.
Yeah.
And Lyra's kind of like, oh, I actually didn't mean to come back for the war, but I guess we're here.
Yeah.
And there's this big, like, final battle between...
Lots of things fighting.
And like, there's this battle between Mrs. Coulter and Lord Asriel. It kind of comes to a head, and then they finally work together. It's really amazing.
It's an
amazing finale.
It's
and I don't want to get into it too much because it's just so fantastic.
Yeah.
And so the battle happens and all of the stuff happens associated with it. And Will and Lyra are like, well, seems like things are going well here. I'm going to duck out.
Yeah.
And they go through yet another window and they find Mary Malone.
Mm.
And they're demons. They know that their demons are there, but their demons are really fucking upset at them. They're really fucked off. So they're like, running along through the things.
They
know
can feel
that they're
them
there,
close,
They're not okay. And Mary Malone's like, it's kind of funny. Like, they get there. Mary Malone's like, what are you doing here? I've just met all these elephants with wheels.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool? And Lyra and Will are like, yeah, okay. And then they go into a cave and they kiss.
Yep.
And it all kind of comes to a head where, like, the worlds cannot be open to each other. It's destabilizing the known universe, if you will. And so, yeah, the book ends.
Oh.
That
was such an abrupt
end. I don't know how to end it. Like there's more stuff, but I don't want to go on.
So essentially, like... What
Lyra
happens
and Will
is they
do
find
kissing.
Out
they fringe.
They do kissing. They reconnect with their demons. Will's got a cat demon.
He's got a cat.
And basically what happens is they find out that the reason why all of these weird things have been happening is because the dust is leaking through out. These holes that We're have been created by the subtle knife.
Yeah.
So what happens is Will goes round, patches up all the holes and all of the dead people. They have to go back to the land of the dead.
No, the dead dissolve into dust.
That's right. Everybody has to go back to their lands, which means that Will and Lyra, they have to separate.
They have to separate forever.
But
they decide that every year at a certain day, at a certain time, they go. They're going to go sit on a bench.
In the same spot in Oxford.
That exists in both worlds.
Yeah.
And they'll sit there together, but apart.
Oh.
And so that's his Dark Materials.
Yeah, we've missed so much stuff. But we actually couldn't go into any more detail.
And we've done our best.
We've done our absolute darndest. You know, something that you briefly talked about. You said small army.
Small army.
So, Asriel's version of a small army is quite literal. We meet these beings called Galavispians.
Yeah, Galavispians.
And they are lit. They're tiny little people.
Yeah.
Okay, and they are called Chevalier Tialis and Lady Salmakia.
It's Chevalier.
Chevalier. Chevalier.
Chevalier Tialis and Lady Salmakia.
I don't like Tialis.
What did you say?
Tialis.
Tialis. Okay. It doesn't matter. It's Chevalier. They're tiny little people. But they're also landed gentry.
Let me tell you. You may go, tiny little spies. Easy, I'll just kick them. No, you won't. Because you know who's going to kick you first? Them. They've got little spikes in the back of their heels. And if they kick you just once, you will die. You will die, bitch.
Think of the most lethal pair of cowboy boots ever. With a spur on the back, you'll die.
Yeah, yeah. They are unstoppable. They're also ruthless.
They're ruthless. They're skilled at espionage.
They ride dragonflies.
Like big dragonflies. They're about 4 inches tall.
Ten centimeters. Yeah.
And they're amazing. And what I want to talk about, not only are they tiny little spies, but they have tiny little phones.
They do.
They're called lodestones.
Yeah.
And I think this is really interesting because the lodestones work under this idea of quantum entanglement,
mm-hmm.
which up until this year was theoretical.
Yeah.
It's the idea that a paired set of particles will resonate with each other.
Yeah.
And if you separate those particles, even if you take them into different dimensions and different universes, they will still resonate with the same frequency. They're still connected. And so the tiny little phones are quantum entanglement. So the tiny spies can do their tiny espionage using
phenomenal
physics.
Philip Pullman literally invented physics.
I know. And it's important to note that quantum entanglement, proving that it exists, because it does now, we can say that it exists, was the 2022 Nobel Prize for Physics this year.
Incredible. Incredible.
And I'd like to say that Albert Einstein once described quantum entanglement as spooky action at a distance. But imagine like putting this into your book, which is like I already, but it's interesting because I read it as a child and I was like, the fuck is that? Cool though.
Yeah.
And then later when I like heard about quantum entanglement, I was like, oh, like the tiny phones.
This is the beauty.
Like the lodestones.
This is the fucking beauty of this whole series.
Yeah.
There's so many different layers. You go, oh, that's actually so cool. And then you're like, wait, it's actually scientifically possible.
Do you reckon this series had an impact on you studying philosophy?
No.
Oh, okay.
Philosophy was accidental. I really wanted economics and politics, and I said, oh, I guess philosophy will do.
Yeah.
Although,
you're so strong.
I've always found the philosophy of religion particularly fascinating.
Yeah.
And I think that comes partly because diehard atheist.
Yeah.
But also, these series probably helped me be a diehard atheist and find kind of certain aspects of religion particularly fascinating, why people
and
love
and
it so
particularly
much.
Flawed. I think this book really
This whole series is a huge critique.
And it's things that I didn't understand as a child.
Oh,
and
no.
I read back as an adult and I was like, fuck, this is good. So
yeah.
Interesting.
My God. You know, what I want to bring up.
Yeah.
This book, you know, we go through lots of different universes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
It was the original Multiverse of Madness.
It was. And it was crazy.
It was crazy.
It was wild. It is complex, but I think ultimately this book is about growing up.
It is.
It's about, like, how big of a process. Like, at the end of the book, Pan settles in his shape.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of been settled for the last two books.
Or, like, slowing down.
He's slowing down. He can still change if he has to, but he's not.
Yeah.
And he's a pine marten.
Yeah.
But a really big one. And he's a white. He's snowy.
He's lit.
But it's ultimately about this.
What the fuck is a pine marten?
It's like a stoat. It's like a really big. It's a polecat.
What the fuck is a polecat?
Google it. I don't know how to explain it.
Did you know what a pine marten was before you read the book?
Yeah, I did, because it's in Captain Crowley's mandolin.
Oh, is it?
There's a polecat in that. What's
did you read name? That at the age of 9?
Good. No. No, but Dad explained what a polecat was because he's read Captain Crowley's mandolin.
Oh, I see. Oh, the pine marten is so cute.
It's so cute. But I think this book is ultimately about the cataclysm of growing up.
It absolutely
and about
is.
Puberty. And about how it is this.
This book. Okay.
Yeah.
Hear me out. It's about religion.
Yep.
It's about adolescence.
Yep.
It's also about quantum physics.
Yep.
It's also about consciousness.
It's also about understanding people as incredibly diverse and singular.
It's also about theories of parallel universes.
Yep.
It's also about family, complex family.
And it's also about chocolatl.
Yeah. And pine martens.
And giant swans.
And Malefa. I have something to say. So, in this final book, we really see Lyra and Will fall in love.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's kind of part of this whole growing up thing. They are becoming adults.
Yeah.
We get descriptions of Lyra's
sexual awakening.
Yeah. She gets a stirring in her pants.
he
does say it.
Yeah, he does.
And I couldn't care less.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't like it. I thought it was shoehorned in. I thought it was unnecessary. And I think it's the one aspect of this entire series.
I think this book is so well constructed that it was a little bit rushed.
And it wasn't necessary. It just wasn't necessary.
But it was because of the...
Because of the
stuff.
Thing.
Yeah.
And also...
The later stuff that we'll talk
the
about.
The biblical stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it does make sense.
But it was stupid.
But I was like, you needed to start this earlier.
I mean, I think I really took it as like a beginning of a relation, like a beginning of like a sexual interest. It wasn't like...
And then nipped in the bud.
But it was more about like the strength of their connection as friends.
Yeah. It was. I thought it was like a beautiful telling of what becoming friends at that age is like.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
It's
and also
very
when...
quick, it's very intense, and it's very loyal.
You're loyal babes.
Yeah, are you though?
We became friends at that time.
We sure did. We way earlier than that.
No, but we found out.
We found each other.
We had
once
a,
more.
We don't talk about the Amy and Charlie cinematic universe often.
No.
Because we assume you. Because
it's actually more complex.
It is.
Than this.
But there was a 10-year gap. Really,
there was a 10-year
when
gap
when we didn't see each other.
Yeah.
And we didn't really know each
Just
other.
Just call us House of the Dragon. We had a 10-year
You're
gap
so
and we were
right.
recast.
We were recast.
We've been recast a few times, actually. Yeah.
I've been recast in the last 2 years.
Yeah. So do you have any other final thoughts on the final book?
Not really. Just that it was such a satisfying conclusion to such an amazing ride.
Honestly, these books can all be read together as one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, this episode has gone on for way longer because... We actually aren't finished.
Yeah.
This, believe it or not, was just our recap of the three books and our thoughts on each book individually. We haven't talked about the series as a whole.
Or like the connected series or the TV show or the movie.
Yeah.
So we've just decided now. Yep.
We're going to do a two-parter.
It's a twofer.
Yeah. It's a Tulufa. No, I'm trying to do a Malufa. I'm trying to do Malufa thing, but it came across
this
as
madness must
Tulufa.
End.
Okay, so I guess we'll be back for a part two. Yeah. Goodbye.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.